Welcome to WebRush, the weekly talk show that brings you stories of real-world development from industry experts and developers like you and me. Each week, Ward Bell, Dan Wallin, Craig Shoemaker, and John Papa find out what it takes to write, deploy, and maintain apps that stand up to the demands of the real world. And now, here are your hosts.
Welcome back to WebRush, episode 191. Today, it's all about our first impressions of Angular 14. And what I mean by first impressions, this means some of us are literally just got this hot off the press, and we're kind of giving you our literal first impressions of what this thing looks like. So you're going to get the raw truth. And I'm John Papa, along with my co-hosts, Dan Wallin and Ward the Truth Bell. How's it going, guys?
The truth. You know what? We are occasional friends, the truth and I.
One thing we can always count on Ward for is reality check of first impressions. You're going to get, I'm looking forward to this one because Dan and I are always, you know, we're like, oh, well, maybe this is what they were meaning to do when we see something we don't like. Ward's going to be like, nope, don't get it.
It's going to be a heck of a lot of get off my lawn today.
I love it. I'm looking forward to this. Dan, can you think he can hang up with, he can keep up with Ward today?
I can never keep up with Ward. Come on. I just tag along and like hold on and get drugged behind, you know? So it's all good though. It's fun.
All right. So why don't we just kick it right into gear and let me just kind of set the stage for everybody on what we're talking about. There's no official guests today. The guests are me, Ward, and Dan. And occasionally we do this, if you've listened to our show for a while, where we talk about first impressions of tech when it gets released. Angular version 14, which I think officially it's about every 6 months, Angular comes out the new major version now, according to their plans. They just released it like a week ago as of our recording. And as part of this, they shared a blog post, which we put in the show notes, so you can go catch that up, on what's in Angular 14. And some of us have tried this and some of us haven't installed it yet. So you're going to get our first impressions on what's in there. And what's cool is some of these features are ones that we've been asking for a while. So we're going to kind of walk through these and kind of give you our first take on what these things mean, what we're excited about, what we're kind of shaking our head on going, huh? And how it's worked out for us so far. So let me start with the man who's installed this first out of the three of us, and that's Ward. Ward, tell us, what is Angular 14?
Well, actually, it's the first release in a long time that I thought might change the way I write Angular applications. It's built, you know, up to this point, when there were sort of the last several releases, they were working so hard on changing the Vue engine and all that stuff, and laying the groundwork for being able to do new stuff. And so it's really it's a real forward step. It's also a forward step in a direction I think is very important for Angular, which is to simplify the darn thing. There are just so many concepts and widgets and doodads that you have to know if you're coming to it for the first time, and that has been discouraging to people. And I'm glad that they have taken up the cause of let's see how we can simplify this while preserving, you know, backward compatibility and making it possible for all of us who are used to it to keep moving forward and to enjoy the new stuff. So I think this is a really great step.
What's your number one simplification point, Ward, would you say, of what you've seen so far anyway?
Clearly, the move to allow you to write applications without ng module. Ng module has been a stumbling, and you guys teach this all the time in your workshops. And this is the one that you probably spend a couple, an hour and a half in shaking your head and sort of saying, well, this is what you do, but, you know, why? And there looks like it's going to be possible to write an entire application without ever having an ng module.
What's that?
That's right. For those of you who aren't Angular people, it's like, so what? We never had them anyway. But
you're going to tell me I can write a module without, I can write an Angular app without ng modules?
I'm going to tell you that. And I've been trying, this is the one feature that I've been trying because I'm preparing for talks at ngconf for a talk. And I you know, I have my example code, and I said, what a great time to try the new stuff. So I'm in there, and so I have my first impression isn't just from reading it, it's from trying it. It's, you know, is it really easier? I'm still not quite sure, but I feel like it might be. I really do feel like it might be. And so I think it's a good step, cautiously optimistic.
So let's take a step back. I'll play my Ward Bell hat for a sec. Let's take a step back for a minute and think about Angular 14 before we get into the specific features that are released, because I do want to talk about modules quite a bit. Because to me, it's one of the most exciting features, if not the most exciting feature that Angular has released in many, many versions right now. But I like what you said when you started this off, Ward. This is the first release in a long time that's really made you think something might change about the way you develop Angular. And I think that says a lot. I mean, I can't remember the last version of Angular where you were telling me something like that. Wow, this is actually a pretty big improvement or change. I assume it's improvement to how you would think about writing Angular. Is that true?
That is true. And I think everything they've done is an improvement in here. Make no mistake about it. Even if I don't particularly like the feature, I understand why it's there.
Right. I think that's important. Some features, like, it's always great when you get a new feature that's like, I'll use that, but maybe I use it once a month. But when you get a feature that shifts the way that you program, I think that's exciting. And I think that's really worth calling out here. The Angular team has undergone a lot of changes the last couple of years, the team itself. And I think this is I want to do a quick call out and kudos to the engineers, the program managers, the leadership, and the developer relations folks. I'm hoping I'm not leaving anybody out over there, who've really kind of taken it upon themselves to think about what is the point of Angular 14 and moving forward. It feels to me like they're trying to say, we care about the developer experience. That's kind of my first impression.
There's a lot
that
of that in there.
Reminds me of something that they didn't call out, but which they have been doing, which is they have been really working hard on the documentation. Now, that one was, you know, near and dear to my heart. That was how I got started.
You wrote the first official docs, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah. And sad to say, John, our tour of heroes does not seem to be the number one getting started application anymore. But you know, times change, and the heroes were getting tired.
I don't accept that. There will always be tour of heroes, and I will absolutely be sharing a tour of heroes at NG Conf.
Well,
in our workshops and sessions. So
absolutely, as we should. But my real point is that they've made a serious investment in documentation over the last year or so, and it's dramatically. I have to say it's friendlier than, you know, and of course they have the benefit of. Now we've been using this for almost a decade, and hard to believe. And so back in the early days, we were kind of saying, well, I don't know what we're going to use this for. Let's see. But now we have a better idea of what it is and how to learn it. And I think that the documentation team has really made great progress there.
Hey, are you building apps in React, Angular, Node, or some other framework? Well, with NX, you can build your full stack apps in a shared monorepo, integrate with modern tools, and reinforce best practices. You'll get advanced code generation and automatically configured tooling like Cypress, Jest, and Prettier that will simplify your workflow. NX also helps you simplify the relationships between applications and shared libraries to make it easier to share more code and develop more consistently across teams. And the best part is, you'll build higher quality apps and spend less time on configuration. So visit nx.dev to get Narwhal's popular open source toolkit for monorepo development today.
Well, I want to shift to Dan for a sec on this, because Dan, you've had a lot of experience, probably more than Ward or I have, or at least commiserate with React, Vue, and these other technologies. When you've developed applications with those other web frameworks, which are also awesome, I've used them as well, they don't have the concept of a module, an NG module. They let you route to a component, load a component at a time. So this concept isn't like an earth-shattering, new breaking way of doing things. It's just newer to Angular, because when Angular got created, Angular 2, the new modern version of Angular, NG module was a necessary thing that they brought in. Since then, these other frameworks have already been doing without having to need that. Do you kind of want to explain what the experience is like in these other technologies that you've had on what it's like with React, Svelte, and Vue to be in a module-less world?
Hard to say. Well, first let's back up because I don't know if you or Ward, one of you mentioned earlier that, you know, if you don't do Angular, you probably don't care. But you could think of modules, if you haven't done this, as it's kind of like having buckets of functionality. So like you could have a customers module for that feature. You could have a orders module for that feature, and you could kind of organize things that way. But you're right, like in Vue and React, for example, and many, pretty much all the others, you don't worry about that. I mean, you know, like in React, you do the import of the component you want to use in a, as a child, and then you just use the tag in your JSX and you're kind of good to go. So I think if you're coming from that world and had, let's say you had to maintain some Angular at work and you had to learn just enough, then it, the standalone components, which I don't know if we mentioned, we should probably mention in Angular 14, they're still in developer preview. So it's kind of important that you probably don't jump on it. I think they even mentioned in the blog post that, you know, things could change. So just kind of be aware of that. But I think the big thing there is you don't have to think about that up front. So if you're developing in for maintenance, you're going to have modules because we've always had modules. But if you're starting something new, you could, and it's going to get better, I suspect, with the CLI. But correct me if I'm wrong, Ward, because I've only played with one little thing. And there's a -- standalone, right?
Mm-hmm. Switch. Yeah, but I want to pause you, Dan, before we tell how it works in Angular now, tell people how does it work in the other technologies? Like, they obviously felt like this wasn't needed. So what? How does it work in React?
Well, you know, a lot of folks will just organize by directory, for example. And that's kind of the organization, which for me totally works. You know, and then you just do the imports, as I mentioned earlier, as you need those, for instance, child components and write the JSX. Super easy.
So you're saying a component just imports other components that it needs?
Yeah.
And is that the standard JavaScript import statement at the top, and that's sufficient? So let's suppose I have something. Let me have a template. Let's make it really simple, you know. And it's the component, and it has a template describing the HTML, and it has nested components A, B, and C. All I have to do in these other ones is simply use the standard import statement, JavaScript import statement of A, B, and C, and they become available.
Yeah, I mean it's for the most part. Obviously, you're exporting that component. You're importing it, and then you could use the JSX from a React standpoint anyway.
From a React standpoint, yeah.
So you can't do, you know, it's still not that easy with standalone components.
No, it's, and I kind of want to get into that.
You have to have an imports array. You have to have an imports array.
And I think, real quick before we get into that, I think that's the things we need to go into, because while I do think it simplifies it, especially if you're building a smaller scale app or even maybe mid-size, I can also see some gotchas where if it was like a bigger app where you probably should have just gone with modules, but I think we should probably talk through that. So
let's go through each of the frameworks real quick, just to think about this in React, as you said, Dan, and tell me if I'm off here. And I'm looking at some React apps that we've worked on together. If I want to import, like I've got component A, as Ward you said, and it's got a child of component B, let's just say it that way. Child A, component A shows component B on it. With React, you would just do a standard JavaScript or TypeScript import at the top and then use that component somewhere in your JSX and it just works, right?
Yep.
Okay. And then if we go to Svelte, let's go to that technique. That's also a very similar thing. You just import it with TypeScript or JavaScript and you just use that component. I'm using my hands that the audience can't see. You put the component inside your angle brackets and it just works. If we go to Vue, I guess this would be slightly different with Vue, because in Vue, you also import, but if you use the, what's the word I'm looking for? The object literal, the options API, the options API. With Vue, you actually have an item called components in Vue where you list what are the subcomponents, the child components. So in a specific example, if I have component A called parent in Vue, to use a child component B in it, I would not only have to import it, but I'd also have to list it as a subcomponent with Vue, correct?
Yeah. At least the stuff I've done. Yeah, I haven't touched it.
That's
a little
more
bit,
like the new Angular standalone component.
Relief. That feels like Angular 14 to me, right, Ward? That's like the approach they
but
went.
But there is relief. There is relief. And I've been playing with it. I don't know whether other people are going to do this. Like, let's suppose you're always importing, or you're mostly importing the same six things over and over again in most of your things. Like, you know, you want the stuff that comes from the common, and you want forms, and you want certain, let's say, material widgets. And, you know, suppose you had a collection of these things that you used over and over again. You can create an array of those somewhere, you know, and export that array. And now it's, you know, so I did that. I called one standard because I said, you know what? I don't want to think about this. All of my components are just going to use standard, whether, you know, this set, they might have something in there they use, maybe they won't, but I don't care because I don't want to think about it. I'm just going to create a standard, an array of the standard things that I import. And then I only have to pull standard in, define that for my component, and I'm good to go. I don't have to, that means I don't have a list of imports at the top of my file that I find distracting and, you know, and worrisome. Like, what do I have to have? I just say, ah, screw it. I'm bringing in import. My standard import's done. So I think that there may be, you know, opportunities here to end up being simpler when you have a large application. We've all built these shared components that we use over and over again. And how did we do it in Angular today? We would put it in a module and then we would include that module. It's the same idea. I just have an array. Boom. Imports, standard, done. So I think, because this was, when they were first talking about this, I was really worried about having to type all these imports over and over again. And with the array possibility, I think it feels more comfortable to me.
I like the way you stated that. And I appreciate you both bearing with me as I talked about the other frameworks in this. And the reason I was kind of going through that is it feels like Angular, while you may not be an Angular developer or you may not be a React developer, folks listening, I want to make it clear that every time one of these new frameworks, comes out, the new version or a new feature, I think it's important that we all pay attention because they're all maybe not borrowing every feature that each has, but they're looking at each other to see what's driving forward. And I think it's been very clear that having no ng module in Angular is something that a lot of people would wish that they could not have to do. And I want to clarify something else. I just looked up to verify because it's been a month since I did this. In Vue, while it is the only one out of React's Svelte and Vue that makes you define the child components, if you use the composition API, you don't have to. So that's the new version of Vue's composition API, which means that the modern version of Vue, React, and Svelte all just ask you to do what Dan said, import a component and you just use it. That's all you do. So Angular's on the way to getting there, but as you said, Ward, it sounds like you have to not only import it, but you have to mark the thing as standalone. And you have to then define your children.
Oh, yes. The other thing, you have to mark it as standalone. That's a backward compatibility thing.
Right. At least for now, I hope.
Yeah. I mean, they could have had a different decorator, you know, instead of a component, they could have called it something else. But this is the way they went. But this is a general flaw of Angular. They ask you to write. They ask you to type too much stuff that I feel like they ought to be able to figure out on their own.
That's not a first impression. That is a 14th impression right there. Yeah, I agree with you.
They love explicit. And I've always wanted to go with convention over configuration. And Svelte is, you know, it's one of the keys to Svelte being skinny is convention. And why can't we do that with Angular? It's a philosophical thing.
Yeah, I'd like to share kind of my thought on why I like no ng modules too. And Dan, you used a great example. You call them buckets. Like there are buckets to kind of describe what's in your app. I've used the word manifest sometimes. It's like a manifest of what's there. Really, if you think about, forget the theory on this. In practice, what changes about the way you code if you're using an ng module versus not is that you somehow have to tell your application, assuming you have more than one component in your app, which I assume you do, you somehow have to tell your application that this component has other components it needs to load on it. And if you have to do that in Angular prior to this, you had to give that list of child components to the ng module effectively. You have to tell it somewhere where it is, or in a router module. With the newer way with this, you now move that to the module, sorry, the component that actually uses them. So it looks like you're just moving the things that you have. You know, if you have parent component A and it's got B, C, and D that are children on it, you used to have to declare somewhere that B, C, and D exist. That was your ng module. Now in the new world, you're listing that in component A in that example. I haven't actually loaded up Angular 14 yet. It's only been out for a week, but that's what it looks like from the code I'm looking at. Has that been your experience, Ward?
Yeah, it's so I wasn't sure, you know, because look, there's no question that for newbies, you know, for people who are just learning, ng modules is just a thorn in their side. Once you've learned it, you kind of like forgot that you know you just deal with it. You write a component, it complain because I don't use the CLI to generate them. I just write them, and so you know, it says, hey, you know, you got to register that with a module. It gives you an error. You go over and find a module you want to put it in. You dump it in. It's just, you know, boilerplate stuff. So I'm not, at this point, I know what an ng module is. It didn't bother me. But there's something, you know, that was really hard to teach. And so the question was, could I get that same sort of, you know, once I knew it, you know, just do it? I'm kind of liking these standalone module components, I have to say. I like the idea also of being able to route to a component and bring it in. There's something also new where I can import a component and add it, you know, live. So like, you know, there's a sort of a container, and I you can go out there and say, you know what, here's go find this component that's sitting out in my file system somewhere and load it up and stick it in my,
nice,
you know, in this thing here, and away she goes. And that means that bundle size could be smaller. I could incrementally load the app, and I think that's intriguing. So I think we're going to like it. It's important to note, by the way, that you can mix these things. So like if you have an application and you got ng modules in it, they'll continue to work.
Yeah. Yeah. So you could actually, that's a great point.
So I think it's really important to note that you can still keep your ng modules and go with the standalone components. You can mix them together. So if you have an existing app that relies on ng modules, no problem. So you can start layering in standalone components and they'll work together. And I think that's important.
So John, one of the things I like about AG Grid, which is a data grid component for the kind of complex grid scenarios that we encounter all the time in enterprise apps, one of the things I really like about it is that it works for a variety of frameworks, Angular, React, Vue, or just vanilla JS. Does that ring a bell for you?
Oh, it really does. There's all these different companies that I work with where they have no choice but to use a lot of these different tools because they have different teams working on them. So being able to port their code or share that code and that technical investment they have is really important to them.
Yeah, well, it's important to us. Ideally, we're a consulting company, and you know, we never know what our client's going to want to use, Angular, React, or Vue, but they're all going to need a grid, and it's great to be able to reach for the one grid that works everywhere, AG Grid.
You know, at any size company, too, because you could have these teams that maybe they only use one framework, but eventually they're going to switch to another one and be able to take that investment again and reuse it is really nice.
So if a multi-framework data grid makes sense to you, please go check out AG Grid at ag-grid.com.
Dan, let's shift gears a little bit. What's your favorite new feature that you're reading through here in Angular 14? What stands out to you?
Well, the module one's probably my favorite just because of the choice it offers, but we've covered that. So, you know, I think some of the others, there's a lot of little small things in there, but they're really nice. So for example, they call it streamline page title accessibility. And when you set the title in the route now, it can just automatically handle that for you, setting the page title. And then they even show in the blog post, if you go read it, and you'll see that in the show notes, how, you know, in more advanced scenarios where the title's dynamic or something, you can, of course, always do that too. but they really just made that easier.
So will that show up like in the tab, Dan? Is that just on the tab of the, so that sets the actual page title in the HTML, so it shows up everywhere and accessible?
Yeah, well, and I think that's, I mean, one reason they did it, I suspect, is just to make it even easier. But the second reason is, yeah, it makes accessibility really good for that. And you could imagine if you're using a screen reader and there was no good title set, you know, every title was home or something. Not going to help you much. So I think it's a super good move there. So that's like one of the small things we could circle back.
There's another thing there, Dan. When you push the back button on the browser, if you hold it, you can often get a list of all of the pages you've been to, and you can actually jump in many applications. You can jump to a specific spot that you were at, which in a line of business app can be very useful.
Yes.
But it's only useful if you know... if the title in that dropdown tells you where you're jumping to. And so I, you know, in my applications, I worked pretty hard to make sure that that list was usable. And now this is going to make it a lot easier.
Definitely. Some of the other small things, like they have a developer diagnostics, which for your templates can be really helpful because we've all got those super complex errors in a template or just no error, no good error. And then you're sitting there scrolling through it, digging, you know, I mean, I'm sure you've all had this scenario where you're literally taking out like line by line. Nope, that's not it. Put it back. Next line. Nope, that's not it. Put it back. Now they have some diagnostics, and it sounds like they have a framework too, so that, you know, we as developers can even add additional diagnostics in the future, which is super cool. Anyway, those are some of the things. The last one I'll point out, because there's a bunch of little things, but they're pretty cool things, is error messages now, they've made it so they're tree shakeable. So therefore, your bundle size should get smaller.
Wait, what does that mean? A tree shakeable error message. Tell me what that means.
Option A would be we could put all the error messages in the bundle so that no matter what scenario comes up, you know, that error message would be there. But of course, the bundle is going to be bigger as a result of that. Or option B is if I never go down a certain road programmatically to trigger a particular error message, it's just not going to be needed. Why would I want it in the bundle? So basically shake out the stuff that I don't need and include the stuff that could come up. And that's what they've done a better job at doing there now for runtime errors.
I'm going to make this one my first, that I'm not quite following, and just put everything out there for everybody in case you're wondering. Maybe you all follow, but the thing I'm not following here, and I understand your explanation, Dan, is that I'm just thinking this through. If you've got a bunch of error messages and they've got a code and a string, the way I'm reading this, and I've read it three times now, is it'll effectively remove the error messages that you're not hitting, the long strings. But how do you know which errors you're not hitting? And what if you do hit it, then the long string isn't there?
You'll keep the error codes. Yeah, so the error codes will still be there, but not the big messages once you're in production bundles.
It feels wonky to me. I don't know. I guess that's one of those where maybe I don't have errors in my apps. So, you know, I guess I'll just...
Yeah, there you go, John. And that's, that's the answer, folks, is don't even worry about that feature. Just don't have errors. That's the solution.
I appreciate you explaining that. Yeah, because I read that a couple of times and I'm like, I think that's what they're saying, but I'd have to write some apps that cause some of these to see kind of what is the net result of this and how much am I really saving when I tree shake my app. I'm kind of curious, like what is actually being saved in my app? Like sometimes, and Ward, you've always got an opinion on this. I'd like to hear your thoughts. Build optimizer.
I've always thought that they should have coded ones. You know, I mean, it's old school. It dates back to the early days when you'd have an XYZ7, you know, error code XY7Z. And like, what? Right. Right, but now that you can link that to something, somebody could go find out what that meant online. They didn't have that back in the 60s. So, what they can do is just give you the code, and then you can go look it up. Which, in a production app, you don't want your end users seeing all that long text anyway. It's kind of useless, and that's where we care about bundle size. So, just being able to have a code and then link to something where they really have a chance to evolve the error message itself rather than have that embedded in code. So they can, if an error message isn't as clean as it should be, maybe they can fix it faster than having and not have to have a release. These are all possibilities that come from having a code.
What I like about what you're saying is that it's less about bundle size. Like when the article in the blog post talks about how it makes the bundle smaller, I would push back and go, how much smaller is the bundle? For me, it's more about when I've written errors and having the code, I like having the error codes in a link in an online page because I can separate that out from the production bundle. And then if I want to give more details on the documentation side of what an error means, I can change that without having to redeploy my actual application. So I like that piece of it.
Yeah, that little bit of extra indirection creates opportunities there. And that's what it means to me. I'm hoping that's the way it actually plays out.
Yeah. Ward, I want to come back to you. Stan listed a few of his favorite features. I know one of your favorite features, Ward, is to eat bananas. So how do you like bananas with Angular 14?
Bananas in a box? Actually, that's part of the new diagnostics.
Do you want to explain what a banana in the box even is for folks who maybe know what that is?
It's syntax. It's Angular syntax that's been around. And, it's bracket, open bracket, parenthesis, some word, closed parenthesis, closed bracket. And that is the special syntax that allows you to both set a property and then respond to a change in that property. What we would sometimes call two-way data binding.
Yeah.
So the syntax that we care about is that bracket, paren, paren, bracket. And apparently, I didn't even know it was possible that you could write instead paren, bracket, bracket, paren. Like, who does that? Apparently people did that and now they detect it. Woohoo! This is not my favorite feature. There is one we haven't talked about, which I think is going to be a big deal and is also going to be misused heavily. And that's the inject function. I don't know if you guys have about that one.
That's a good call.
It's really intriguing because it allows for me, I think it's, and in our show notes, I'll point you to an article about it that I think gives you some of the sense of it. It allows us to, instead of injecting a whole service or something like that, and then picking that service apart to find the part that you want, when it's just got a, you had this grand data service that was getting every kind of thing that you got in your, you would say get the X's, the Y's, the Z's, da, da, da. You could write a get X function that internally injected the service, found your X thing, pulled that all out, wrapped it up in a nice little thing, and exposed that, giving your consumer exactly what he wanted. He wanted to get X. He didn't care about the service and what you had to do to get X. He just wanted to get X. And so now I can create one of these things and inject that, which means that my component that's injecting that it says what it wants, and I can focus on what I want, and I don't have to know about anything else. I think that's nice. I'm a little afraid that people are going to start going crazy with it, because you can inject. The other thing is that you can use this to inject things in your constructor without it passing anything in, so the constructor wouldn't have any parameters in it. And some people are going to say, "Woo, that's great." No. I'm worried, you could do away with constructor injection. I don't think that's a great thing. And I think a lot of the people who are at Angular who were behind this idea don't think that's a great thing either. So it's ripe for abuse, but I think it has real possibilities. It'll be interesting to see how the community finds the right way to use this thing, but it's powerful and I like it.
So we're getting close to the end of our show. This has been a great tour of a lot of the features. Folks, definitely check out the show notes. There's a lot of our comments here. We've linked to the blog post we're referring to, how to get Angular 14, and there's more features we're not covering. But I kind of want to wrap up with our initial first thoughts and ask each of our hosts today one question that you can each respond to about Angular 14. This is first impressions, guys. What is your first impression? Has Angular improved due to Angular 14? Ward, let's start with you.
Yes. I think it's an unambiguous yes. This is a good move. This is a really good move, both for people who are super experienced with Angular, but more importantly, for people who aren't, because I think there are a lot of simplifications in here, and a lot, the whole message thing we were talking about, it's an effort to make the messages clearer. They put a lot into that. Better documentation, better. It's just their focus on making it easier to learn and easier to use is This is a big step.
I appreciate that. And tacking out of the message thing, just to say, have any of you out there in our audience ever created a list of error messages in an app that's been bundled and you realize you misspelled a word in the error message? It's text strings, very easy to do. You go live and you've got a misspelled word. And then you're like, geez, I'd really like to fix that, but I don't want to redeploy my entire app because of this. This would also be a way where you could link out too, where you could have those text messages link out to a doc if you wanted to go that route. Dan, what do you think? Is this a step forward? And when I say this, I mean this tongue in cheek, not like a minor step, but is this a big step forward for Angular?
Yeah, I agree with Ward. It is. One of you mentioned earlier that previously there was a lot of focus on like the Vue engine. And, you know, I get it. That takes a lot of time to get that right because, I mean, ultimately that's what we're using it for. I think this one, if I were to summarize kind of what we've done or what they've done here, is make it more approachable and make it easier to work with in general. We didn't mention one big one that I probably should have when you asked about favorite features, and that's the like CLI now has auto completion.
How many times have you typed ng sever instead of ng serve?
Every time. Yeah. I don't know if you guys now remember, but that typo used to be valid. They pulled it out, but years ago, you could mistype that. It would still work. So the auto-completion's, you know, super cool. I mean, there's other things like coalescing non-nullable values. We won't go into that.
That's a mouthful. Yeah.
there's definitely scenarios where if you're using the, you know, the double question mark, that maybe there's a better way to do it. And they'll kind of tell you about that and catch it now. And so I think, again, if I summarize everything, it's just easier to use, and not just the modules, but some of this other stuff that we've mentioned makes it easier to use and work with, which I love.
This is the first time I've ever heard you say Angular is easier to use since Angular version 1, Dan.
That's probably true, given that we did Angular JS.
Easier to use than it was.
That's a good clarifier.
I'm not saying it's easier to use than the other frameworks because I don't know these others as well. I mean, I think they've all, you know, every framework has its glories and its trepidations. And, So I don't want this. This isn't the time to do a cross framework comparison. But are they making a step in the right direction? And how big is that step? I think this one qualifies as a really a big step for the rest of us out here I'm happy with it.
So I'll tell you my impression. So I'll answer my own question. Do I think it's better to improve significantly? Yes and no. So I'm going to straddle the line. I agree with what Dan and Ward are saying in this. And I agree with their focus on developer experience. Also what you're not seeing, and I forget it was Dan or Ward who said this, but the focus on things like the Vue engine and the under the cover stuff. It seems to me like I've heard that song and dance for the last several years of the next version of Angular is going to have a better engine of X, Y, or Z. Great. It's getting faster and more. I like those and appreciate that. And I don't mean to put down those features. The team worked on them hard and there were valid reasons for it. But I felt like the developer experience was always put on the back burner. And it's gotten to the point for me where, like Ward said, I feel like the other frameworks are easier to use. So what this version I feel does really right is it really shows me that developer experience is important to the team. They recognize it and their actions are following that up. So I'm looking forward not to 14. I'm actually looking forward to what's after that. I want to see what else is going to happen here because there's other topics that we've talked in cross-framework stuff, and we won't get into that here, as Ward mentioned. We'll do another show, maybe, talk more about the cross-framework and the state of web frameworks again, because we do that once a year. But there's other features. I'm wondering, you know, why HTTP client? Why does that exist in the form that it does? Why do we need what's in the decorators now? Why so much, I'll use one of Ward's words, ceremony inside of the Angular applications, where you have to type so many things, where in the other frameworks, you don't have to do this. And it's not so much just typing, but it's the overall impact. So I'm excited by the direction they're heading. It's not talk, it's action. And that's the part that excites me the most is that they've taken a step forward to say, this is important to us and to the community. And that's why I'm excited about it. I'm more excited about Angular 14 than I've been about, I don't know what the last version was that I was more excited about. And it's not because of the features, it's because of what they're doing. So I don't think the features are that impressive. I think it's what they're doing is that impressive to me. That's why I vacillate on yes and no.
That's a good point, because it's a lot of little things, but it's showing that direction, like you talked about, of improving the overall developer experience.
Yeah. Well, hey, I want to make sure we end on our normal final thoughts for everybody here today. That I'll make that my final thought for folks too. But Dan and Ward, what's your final thought for the audience today? Ward?
I knew you were going to ask me.
I always ask you first because I know you're never ready.
Why? I don't. My thoughts are just mush. Oh, God, it's just mush. Because I've been trying to wrap my head around this stuff. When you know something, you don't even know what you forget all the troubles. It just becomes part of your life. And yeah. So I'm trying to look with fresh eyes on this thing to try and evaluate it. And that's fun. So there, my final thought is have some fun out there, I guess. I don't know. That's trite. But there you have it.
It is fun. It is fun. I think it's a good final thought. Having fun and learning something new is great. Dan, what's your final thought for the audience?
So while we've been talking, if Ward and John, you guys can't all see the video, but they can. And they might have wondered, why does he keep looking at his other monitor so much? So I actually just did in this podcast, I have this Angular Jumpstart project. I've literally had it since the alpha days. And it even used to be an AngularJS project. So I have been going through the process to do ng update, which, by the way, went flawless. I do have one problem for a testing scenario I got to figure out, but the app itself worked flawless. So I guess my one thought is if you are an Angular developer and you're not taking advantage of ng update on a scheduled basis for your maintenance plan, you should. Because it's a lifesaver for just keeping your app more modern and makes it a lot easier. Otherwise, you might as well just create a brand new project and copy over files if you're really, really old. So I guess that's mine, is plan this into your maintenance.
That's a good tip. And we'll put a link to ng update in the show notes too, so folks can check it out if you haven't done that so far. And I want to thank you both for doing this episode and for all of our audience for bearing through us here. Even if you're not an Angular developer, I think it's really important to understand what's out there. If you're React, JavaScript, Svelte, whatever you use, to really think about what's happening in this ecosystem. And I want to thank all of you for listening each week and for our great sponsors, IdeaBlade, Ionic, AG Grid, and Narwhal. For keeping us on the air, you'll hear from us every Thursday morning. See you next time.